I'm Dean Newland, and welcome to the Business of Intuition, where I coach, facilitate, train, and speak on the hard science and meaningful experience of intuitive leadership in business, so you can make better decisions, forge real connections, and creatively solve problems to amplify your impact and simplify your life. Welcome to the Business of Intuition.
Probably since the days of Winslow Taylor, who is credited for founding modern management over 100 years ago, there's been a slow but steady movement away from the notion that the purpose of business is to make money to the purpose of business is to create lasting, meaningful value for stakeholders, where money is a resource, not the end goal. COVID sped up the trend towards purpose while we were all forced to slow down and look in the mirror during our mandatory lockdowns. The Great Resignation is also a cry from employees everywhere to be working for purpose-centered organizations, where meaningful work and connections are more important than burnout-creating efforts to increase productivity and efficiency. But how do leaders create a purpose-centered organization? How do they balance the need for staying competitive and profitable with creating meaningful and lasting experiences and loyalty with our employees and our customers? Well, my next guest on the Business of Intuition has some answers. Katie Burkhart is the mastermind behind MIOS, the system for running a purpose-driven business, and has quickly become one of the go-to experts in the space. She's a serial entrepreneur, keynote speaker, minimalist designer, jargon slayer, and sharp communicator. She synthesizes connections that enable humans to make the most of their time they invest in their work. Katie Burkhart on the Business of Intuition. So Katie, thanks for being a guest on the Business of Intuition. I wanted just to start us off with a question, because I know that you're very much into and study and help companies around purpose. But I wanted to maybe back into this. If a company is not purpose-driven, because there's some people out there would say, well, we're purpose-driven. We got a purpose statement. We got a mission statement. I mean, come on. Of course, I'm a purpose-driven company. Are they? And what is a non-purpose-driven company? What does that look like?
So non-purpose-driven companies, I would say, fortunately or unfortunately, are probably the vast majority of businesses who are still looking at the old logic, the old rules of the game, with a mechanical mindset very much focused on the short term, hyper efficiency, putting things in silos, and are really still saying that money is the goal. And the first big shift that people have to make to be purpose driven, and it's how we define a purpose driven business, is that money or profit is not the purpose of the company. It's actually the outcome of effectively pursuing your focused purpose. And your purpose is why you exist and why it is that you're doing what you're doing and why it matters. And for us, that means you provide lasting value. And that actually opens up a lot of great possibilities and a lot of ways to come at value versus kind of sticking in that very short sort of social impact space. There's a lot of ways to provide lasting value, but it's that shift of saying, oh, I'm not here to make money. I'm making money as a resource. It's not actually the goal. And I need to start aligning my business to why it is that I'm here in the first place and starting to get my actions and goals moving in that direction. So fortunately or unfortunately, I think most of us are still in that old logic, that old industrial mentality versus shifting to the more human-centered mentality that's really key in being operating and being effective in the purpose economy.
So what's been changing in our world that has made us want to be more purpose-driven? Why is the time now to have this conversation with you and you with your clients? And I agree, by the way, around being purpose-driven, we have similar values, but why now? What sort of the factors that have created this need to make a shift in how we approach business?
I would say it's a shift that's actually been coming for a pretty long time. I don't think that there's any debate that the COVID and everything that's happened around that have accelerated it, because it's caused us to look at what's really important. And for us, it all comes down to how we want to spend our time. The purpose economy is, yes, shifting from mechanical to human-centered. But what you really get at when you look at that is, number one, time is now the most valuable currency. Just paying people more money isn't going to do it. We as human beings are saying, I have so many hours, so many days, so many months on this earth. How do I want to spend it? And how can I really make an impact with the time that I have? And that's shifting how we need to run business to prioritize, you know, time and making sure that we're using it in the best way possible. Purpose is not actually a new concept. It's been around for a pretty long time. Even when I talk to my staunchest newsletter subscriber, which is my grandfather, he can tell you that I remember when I was working, we talked about these things. So it's not so much that it's new, it's that it's transitioning from that super awesome poster in the break room to, I actually need to run my business in a different capacity that values different things.
Okay, so, all right, let me ask you some term questions. One of them you mentioned in your website, something called the purpose economy. Nice sort of combination words there. Why did you want to put economy next to purpose? Why did those two words need to be together?
Because it's really important to understand, and at least for us, it's very important to understand that we can't separate finance out of this. It's very easy to be like, making money is bad. You know, like anybody who's focused on making money is bad. As someone who spent a large part of her career working with nonprofits, I can tell you that there are an awful lot of problems in how those organizations run, because we're basically starving them because we've made money bad, and investing into staff is bad. Investing into the infrastructure they need is bad. You know, right. We don't really want to repeat that mistake in business. So we want to make sure first and foremost that that's there. This one of, and perhaps one of the most effective official definitions of purpose economy, moving us from technology information into purpose economy, is that it's balancing financial gains with solving human problems, so that we're now at a space where we have achieved enough in the economies and societies that have come before us. Agrarian is another one, to say, hey, we're now at a place where we've solved a lot of problems. We have a wide amount of information available to us. There's so much we can now do. We as humans have moved to a place where we're like, okay, it's not sufficient to just make me another t-shirt, to make me another t-shirt. Like, does this actually matter that we're going about doing these things? So we wanted to make sure that you're starting to wrap that into, you're not just going to make money to make money anymore. Most people aren't motivated. We know research shows us that most founders at this point are more motivated to make impact than they are to make money. But we cannot lose the fact that money is the resource in most cases that allows us to make impact, and especially to scale impact and solve big problems.
Yeah, I totally agree. So you mentioned also on your website that one of the most important words is the word no. Could you tell me why? And I actually, there's a lot that I could say on my end of that, because I agree there's so much that could be drawn out of that. But provocative statement, why is no such an important word?
So when we shift from an industrial mindset where it's all about efficiency, you know, and this gets into conversations that are being had around the 4-hour work week, for example, versus the assembly line, or people who are frustrated with Amazon, who are taking efficiency measures to a whole new place and saying, wait a minute, I'm not sure that this is working. And it's because you can only be so efficient. The productivity trap is a real thing. You know, if you got more done that day, guess what? People are now sending you more emails. You know, they're finding at Amazon, the addition of robots doesn't mean that the humans do less work. It means they're capable of doing even more stuff. So at a certain point, no becomes really critical for a couple of reasons. One, you cannot do everything, and you certainly cannot do everything well, especially not as a human being. Number two, when it really comes to delivering value and pursuing your purpose, you have to make choices. Yes is an easy thing to say. If you say yes to everything, you didn't make a choice. But when you're really sitting down as a purpose-driven business, what you're trying to do is keep the organization aligned and saying, well, this is really why we're here and why it matters. And this is the vision that I want to achieve and the goals that I want to hit. We're going to have to be selective about what it is that we put our resources toward in order to achieve those ends, which is, as I mentioned, part of that human factor and shifting to a more human mindset.
So yeah, you mentioned You mentioned Amazon, which is a great example. I mean, one could say that Amazon has a very strong purpose around the customer experience, and they build everything towards that goal. And yet you bring into a very good point that there is a huge, advanced, constantly evolving mechanism towards efficiency. And, you know, so one, but so kind of like on one hand, we got purpose. On the other hand, we have this old model sort of coexisting together. Is that how you see it? Or how would you, I mean, if you were to say, let's just take Amazon as an example here, how do you bring that organization into a purpose-centered organization where it's not just our external purpose regarding a client or a customer base, but we bring it inside the organization as well with the human experience? So speak to that a little bit.
Absolutely. So it doesn't mean that efficiency goes away. Like, obviously, if you can take advantage of technological efficiencies, information efficiencies, communication efficiencies, you should absolutely do so. But choosing to pursue efficiency only into infinity will not work for human beings. And you're already seeing that, people who are frustrated at Amazon and other companies saying, wait a minute, you know, how many more hours can I work? Bleeding work into 24 hours a day is not working very effectively, and you're not getting the best out of your people. So to get at your question, the shift is that the customer and delivering value to the customer is what your purpose is about, right? Like, that's the primary value. We're delivering value to someone. But one of the shifts that we talk about in purpose-driven businesses is typically when we rank a company's stakeholders, the team actually sits first, because you can't drive value to your customer successfully if you don't have a team to do it. And increasingly, what we're seeing in labor shortages and the great resignation right now is that what they're looking for is very different than what they once looked for. So this gets back to that purpose economy of time is more valuable. Being able to make impact is more valuable. Understanding as a leader, not just what am I asking you to do, but why are you asking me to do it? What impact is it actually going to make before I spend all my time investing in it? And starting to look at that a little differently. And I think that's where, you know, looking very specifically at, it was from an article I read, how efficient can we make people on, you know, in fulfillment plans to get things out so that the customer doesn't have to wait more than 2 days with it, which, as somebody who appreciates when that thing I need arrives in 2 days, like, I understand it. But how do you start to balance that out with measures that say, okay, like, we can't, like, we're going to start putting caps on what we expect people can do, is one off the cuff example to make sure that we don't burn out our people or are constantly turning over our people as Amazon, because that also will start to erode our ability to be effective for our customer, if that makes sense. One of the other ways you're seeing this, which may be a just completely different way to look at it, is no, we don't ever want to not be there when our customer needs us, but you've seen increasingly companies taking like weeks off or days off where they're just closing and they're saying, our people need a break. We'll be back to you in a week. And that means you've chosen to say, I'm prioritizing my team over my customer for this time period. And we're going to figure out how to deal with that. And that's something that I think you're going to start to see continue, that you can't make everybody happy all the time. How do you start to make those trade-offs and understand what those effects have? And I think starting to trade in favor of the team is a trend that will continue to happen.
Yeah, it seems like you mentioned the great resignation, that is adding more fuel to this fire around people thinking more consciously about their choice. Where do I want to work? Do I want to continue to work at the place that I'm at now? Or do I want to work from home? Do I want to move to a different city? You know, there seems to be a lot of discussion right now with people regarding purpose. So you mentioned also the team, you know, it starts with the team. And I really like that idea. So let's just say I'm listening in on this and I am a member. Let's say I have a team in an organization. I would love to have my senior leaders, you know, be on board with this, but we don't have that right now. I want to do something to move in this direction. What would they do? What could a team leader do to start building that sort of team that is more purpose-centered?
Where we typically see this happening, because it's not a could, here's what we see happening, is that typically it's either, it's usually somebody like one level under the C-suite, maybe two leaders levels under, that's saying, hey, I think we need to start doing this differently, and here's why. And sometimes it's coming because there's a groundswell within the employee base that's saying we need to start doing things differently. Sometimes it's because top down, we've noticed that there's a problem, just to give you a sense of how people are starting to approach this and how they ultimately call us and say, hey, we need some help. But where we usually start is with listening. And this is where intuition starts to come in. You know, we need to sit down and start listening to what's going on. We need to listen to our team. We need to listen to leadership. We also need to listen to our customers and potentially other partners that go into doing what it is that we do every day and making sure that we understand what's happening and we engage them with this process. This is not something that CEOs can dictate and wave and say, we've got it, we're done, no problem. This is something that you've got to skill build everybody at the organization to understand these shifts. The next thing that we work with people to do and that they need to get out there is, what is your purpose? And then beyond that, what is the rest of your core strategy, which is your vision, mission, values, and story? And you need to have all of them to be effective. Your vision tells you where you're going. Your mission is what you're going to do to get there. And your values are how you go about doing those things. The story is what brings them all together in a human, accessible, and meaningful narrative. Once you have that, there's a lot you can do from there, but getting that, getting your leadership on board, having your team embrace it, being able to communicate it really clearly is always step one for any organization that's looking to make this shift. Then you can start to look at what are the next steps. And usually that next step is, how do we set outcomes that we actually want to achieve, which are top level, longer term goals that are generally speaking more reflective of what you're actually helping your people do or achieve, not what you're doing. You know, old mentality is, we're going to become the biggest company in our industry. Old mentality. Outcomes are things like, we're going to see continuous improvement in our subscribers' businesses, or we're going to be able to reach every eligible applicant, or things where you're actually helping them to do or achieve something. That's what's going to make your long-term impact. That's typically the next level. And then we can start working out, how do we start aligning our actions towards that and then assess if we're actually generating results.
So I know that you're big into definitions. How do you define purpose? I mean, if you were to say a company wants to, as you had just described, start with that, what is your purpose? What would you define a purpose to be? I've heard a lot of different definitions. You know, some people would say, well, they mix it up with maybe a mission statement.
Yes.
Sometimes a purpose is a kind of a rallying cry that is unachievable in any one particular lifetime, but it's an overall direction. How would you define that?
So we define it as your fundamental reason for being. So it should center on your why you exist, why your company does what it does, and why what you do matter. And as I mentioned, to matter, you need to provide lasting value. And that lasting value can come in different shapes and sizes. So it's not just solving world hunger. You can also do other things to help, you know, put value out into the world and help people move forward. For example, my company's purpose is to make work matter for humans. You know, I don't know that we are saving the whales, but we would say that it's still valuable. And then what you're looking to do is to say, how do we make sure that it's focused? And that's usually the next conversation that we have with organizations looking to set one. People who put out purposes like, we're here to save the world, we immediately look at and say, that's not really giving me enough specificity to actually align my organization, put together a vision, and actually move this forward as a tangible business. But I think what's more important beyond how you say it is how you use it. So there's some flexibility in there as to what you put together, but we really look at it as a lens. And you should be able to take any decision, filter it through the lens of your purpose, and arrive at something that aligns with it. The results should make some logical, thoughtful sense. And I think that's a really important piece to understand versus your vision, mission, and values, which serve different functions as far as setting your core strategy. I hope that answers your question.
Oh, yeah, it does. Yeah. And so I'm assuming then that the purpose statement, as it becomes really clear, then the how of our ability to implement and to execute against that becomes our mission statement, our goals and values that would fall and cascade under that.
Yes.
What's your thought on that? Because we do a lot of strategic planning in our company. And you know, I was just talking to a client yesterday about it. Says, well, now the hard part is here, because you've now developed a vision. You've got your key mission statement and your strategies and your values. You've got it all nice and it makes a lot of sense and it's aligned. Now the hard part is living it. Now it's the execution on that. Now it's like, what are the resources we have and the mindset that we have that will allow us or not allow us to fulfill on that? But do you have any sort of, I don't know, stories or any particular examples of like companies being able to get to that part where now it's the implementation. Now it's
we've got the direction. Let's head there. You know, let's make it happen. Let's transition.
So I'm actually working with a couple of organizations right now who are in the process of either starting or finishing the what we call the three-year plan part of their strategic planning process. And one of them has been really effective in their last couple of cycles. They didn't work with us. We're new this time around in saying, hey, you know, we have it together. We know what the key results are. We understand what actions we're going to take. And by Jove, they regularly review where their progress is. They check off what's going on and they've actually fulfilled most of what it is that they've set out to accomplish, which has been really exciting. This year, part of the reason we came in was to say, okay, we've gotten through some of the things that were quite straightforward. Now we're starting to look at having to make choices. What does get our time? What doesn't get our time? How do we determine what's really effective? And this organization, we're far enough along. I know one of their biggest shifts is being able to say, we are going to align our objectives to our outcomes and actually start to measure what's working and what isn't. So that when we get here in 3 years, we have more information to say, okay, here's how we continue to make shifts and improve. So let me back up a couple of things that I skipped over. One of our other principles is that learning, if you're not learning, you stop, and that you have to constantly be willing to look at what's working well, what you need to improve, and be willing to continue to improve it. And having a good sense of intuition is part of that. And being willing to say, well, we feel really strongly about this, we're going to go out and test it, helps you to learn faster and hopefully figure out whether you should pursue it or not, what's working or not. So that's a piece of that. Being willing to embrace that learning process is huge. The other piece is what we call in our team and in our system calibration. But what's the cadence at which you listen to your stakeholders, look at and review what it is that you're doing, look at and review the measurements that you've put in place, communicate those things, and make adjustments? And where we actually have that set at different cadences or things you look at every week to every month to every quarter to every year to every 3 years that fall into all of those buckets so that you're constantly calibrating and recalibrating what's going on. I would be the first to say, and I don't know what your experience has been, this is probably the hardest part for organizations. And in our experience,
the calibration part.
Absolutely. Yeah. That even if they get a really great core strategy in place and everybody's on board and excited, the day-to-day comes and we lose sight. And right. Then all of a sudden it's been a year or 3 years and we've drifted. So really working to make sure that that system is in place, whatever system you choose, to make sure that you're doing those things to try to keep yourself, like going to a chiropractor, constantly readjusting to keep yourself aligned.
Right, right. With all the changes that are going on these days, it seems to be just almost daily, there's something that happens that our world shifts. Does one have a purpose that is overarching and timeless? Or does our purpose need to be modified based on the external environment?
Great question. If you've set a really strong purpose, it will likely last you, the benchmark we like to use is, will it last you 100 years? Could you be pursuing this for 100 years? It's not a goal. You're pursuing it. Could you pursue it for 100 years? Because a lot of people look at purpose and saying no, and they say that's really limiting. And we're like, try it for a while. I think what you'll find is that it's not limiting at all. It's just focusing you. And there's a lot of things you could do to advance the way we communicate complex information, for example, which is a purpose of one of our clients. There's so many ways you could approach that and so many ways that will evolve as technology and other factors evolve. But what will change is reviewing your vision and reviewing your mission. We really strongly suggest that you look at your vision at least every 3 years, definitely your mission every single year, because you're absolutely correct. External forces are going to rise up. You know, hey, we had a pandemic and our customers are now facing these challenges they weren't facing before. Perhaps we need to shift what actual mission we're on, exactly how we're doing what it is that we're doing to support them or to take advantage of a new opportunity or to deal with a new reality that's come about. For example, one of the I mentioned earlier, we're doing their strategic plan. Somebody pointed out the threat of like, which sounds awful because it's potentially good on one hand, but for them, it's like, well, they provide scholarships. And they said, well, what if college became free? You know, like what happens to us, you know, and starting to think about how they look at, well, that purpose doesn't really change. They have a very good one, but our mission may, and how do we start to look at that in our strategic planning and build in listening and assessment to make sure that we're thinking long-term about how we can still fulfill that purpose and make real impact and achieve our outcomes. But that may mean adjusting exactly how we go about doing it.
Right. Katie, I want to go back to something you just said. What's the difference between a vision and a purpose?
So your vision is really what is exactly what the word sounds like. What do you see? You know, what does the world look like if you were successful in advancing your purpose and achieving your outcomes? What is that? And it should paint a picture. It should make people excited. It is probably the most aspirational of the components of your core strategy. And that's what you're trying to get to. So some people put out a vision that, you know, no child will be left behind. As an example, we will have one of the vision statements I really like is we will have a food system without waste or want, which is a really motivating vision statement. But that's not necessarily your purpose. It's not necessarily why you exist. That's what you're hoping to get to.
Could you do a comparison between, here's a, like one you just said, that was around the food system, you know, if that's a vision, then what's that company's purpose? So we can see the difference.
Well, I actually don't know that company's purpose. So okay. let me pick a different one. No, it's okay.
Yeah, on the spot here, okay?
No, you're good. One of the groups that we worked with, and I won't get this verbatim because it's been a little while, their purpose is to advance the way we communicate complex information. But their current vision statement looks at making visual communication a universal skill, because they really feel that we're going to have to hit that as a vision in order to keep up with the level of complexity of information we need to communicate. It is possible they will achieve that vision, but it doesn't necessarily mean that they don't need to continue advancing the way we communicate complex information. One of the first things that comes to mind is using voice to be able to access and exchange information, which is a completely different angle,
right?
Or interfaces, you know, outside of visuals. But that's how they chose to shift it and said, this is the benchmark that we want to put out there. We can then set outcomes that make that more tangible as to what we're actually helping our customers do to hit this. I hope that that helps to provide some clarity, but yeah. I'm happy to dig in further. Yeah, no. I am a word nerd, so.
No, I love it, actually. I love it. You mentioned intuition, and I guess this show that we're on right now has that in its title. So let me go back to it. What role does intuition play in a purpose-centric organization?
I think it plays a pretty big role, and in a couple of ways that came to mind specifically for me and even in how I run my own business. One, getting back to that conversation about efficiency and making choices, some of it also comes with giving yourself enough space to think. And this is less me putting my hat on as a practitioner, more my putting my hat on as a CEO myself and saying, you know, no, I don't want to fall behind the trend. Yes, the world is moving rapidly fast, but I need enough time to actually think, to feel how things are settling, to determine if this is where I need to be going. That's as human as anything else. And I've spent a lot of time in our work with leaders, as well as my own, you know, sharing my story with other people, saying I've worked harder to create that space for myself to make sure that I can do that. So that's one way that I look at it. The listening piece is another big area where intuition comes in. You're not going to capture a lot of impact and a lot of people's experiences purely on data alone. It's a fundamentally imperfect measurement system, which we tell people often because it's a hard thing to accept.
Yes.
But that listening piece, you have to engage that intuition to be like, what am I hearing? What themes are coming up? Yes, I suppose if you have enough data, you can chunk it through machine learning, but it misses a lot and leaves a lot ununderstood in what is not said, what is said between the lines, in how you can really learn from the people you're trying to help. How do you turn that into a conversation versus sort of a one-way radio? So that's another big piece. And then that decision-making piece of how do you get to know? We work with organizations to actually build what we call a decision case. How do you say for, you know, not what we're going to order for break today, but like major decisions. Is this actually aligned with our purpose or isn't it? And most of those cases, is it possible that they could pull some data in to support it? Yes. Do we think that that's even a good thing? Probably. In a lot of cases, it's intuition based. You know, this is something we're experiencing. We're hearing it from our customers. We've heard it enough times that we can make the case that this would be a good thing for us to pursue. You know, how do we, you know, build a test case, pursue it, assess it, determine if it worked, and being willing to do that. And then keeping that learning mindset on of saying, sometimes we're going to nail it. Sometimes we're going to miss, but we're always going to learn something, and that's okay.
Hmm.
In fact, it's not just okay. It's great. We want to learn things as much as possible.
Right, right. Danny, I think you're just doing some really interesting work. I like what you're saying and I love your website. And like, I guess my last question is, how can people connect to you and sort of follow what you're about or even work with you in the future?
Wonderful question. And thank you so much for having me. It was great getting reacquainted with you. I actually had watched your podcast a couple of years ago, but the best way to get a hold of me is twofold. One, if you really like what I'm talking about and you're interested in learning more about being purpose-driven, what does that actually mean? And more importantly, outside of some really cool principles, how do I actually go about doing it? Mm. I would suggest that you subscribe to our weekly logic. It's a weekly email brief focused on one actionable point at a time to help you make the shift into running a purpose-driven business or running one more effectively. And you can find that at matterlogic.co/weekly. The other way to get a hold of me is to actually find me on LinkedIn. I am one of those old school cats that will accept every connection I'm given. And if you reach out and say, I'd like to have a conversation with you, I will make the time to talk to you and figure out if there's something we can do to help, whether that's a conversation, getting you some resources, or actually coming in and helping to support your business.
All right, great. Well, Katie, thank you so much for being a guest. It's really been wonderful.
I thoroughly enjoyed this conversation. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Business of Intuition. If you enjoyed the show, please subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. If you'd like to learn more about Dean or Mission Facilitators Leadership, go to mfileadership.com. That's mfileadership.com.